Good afternoon and welcome. This session is On the Road for Archival Outreach, the Circuit Rider Archivist Program in Georgia. Can you hear me in the back? Good, okay. This was a two-year endeavor funded by a grant from NHPRC. And the program placed a traveling archivist at the disposal of both local governments and historical repositories to advise them on archival and records management issues, outreach, and public services. This is going to be a panel discussion, so we'll start with introductions. And we are very, very fortunate today to have two organizations that are participants in the program who will be able to tell you from their perspective how the Circuit Rider Archivist Program worked for them. The first is Judge Stiles Estes on my right. She serves as the judge of probate court of Meriwether County. She has served in this capacity for the last 8 years, a lifelong resident of Meriwether County and a graduate of Mercer University. Judge Estes' previous work included rehabilitative services at the Roosevelt Warm Spring Institute for Rehabilitation and emergency services work with the Department of Family and Children's Services. Our second panelist is Louise Tigner Garrett. She is also a lifelong resident of Meriwether County. She graduated with honors from Greenville High School and cum laude from North Georgia College and State University, where she was also featured in Who's Who in American Colleges and Universities. Mrs. Garrett ran in a three-person race for clerk of Superior Court of Meriwether County and took office on January 1, 1985. She was selected to Who's Who in Georgia in 1988, to the 1996-97 National Directory of Who's Who in Executives and Professionals, and to the International Who's Who of Professional Administrators for 2000. She was also elected by her fellow clerks as Superior Court Clerk of the Year for the 6th, 7th, and 8th Districts of Georgia for the year 2000. Our third panelist is Dr. Randall Gooden, who is the Georgia Circuit Rider Archivist. He is also an assistant professor at Clayton State University. He began his archival career at West Virginia University and studied under George Parkinson and earned a master's degree in public history. After completing his doctorate, he served as head of the Archives Library at Ohio Historical Society's Youngstown Historical Center for Industry and Labor during the center's growing years. Before coming to Georgia, Gooden served a stint as executive director of the Geauga County Historical Society in Burton, Ohio. He has taught history at West Virginia University, Youngstown State University, and Ursuline College, in addition to Clayton State. He's also done consulting work with local governments on records management issues. I'm Elizabeth Barr, and I work at the Georgia Archives as the Assistant Coordinator for the Georgia Historical Records Advisory Board. And the board's work runs the gamut from operating a state-funded grants program, an annual awards program, maintaining a directory of over 550 organizations across the state. It's an online directory, and also co-sponsoring Archives Week celebration every year. Being active in both professional archival and records management professional associations, I've served as the secretary of the Georgia Records Association for 8 years, treasurer of the Society of Georgia Archivists for about 5 years, and past president and chairman of the board of the ARMA, the Atlanta chapter. And I wanted to recognize one person in the audience who is a member of the Georgia Historical Records Board. Ms. Kay Minshew, would you stand up? She's the director of the Troup County Archives, and she is the longest serving member on our board.
I'm afraid that makes me old. But...
makes you very experienced. She's also the only archivist on our board, so she is extremely valued. I'll discuss some of the background and origins of the Circuit Rider Archivist Program today, and Judge Estes will give you a portrait of Meriwether County. Louise Garrett will also talk about their experiences as participants in the Circuit Rider Archivist Program, and Dr. Gooden will talk about the operations of the program, how it operated, and what the results were. Let's begin with a little bit of background. Back in the 1970s, the Georgia Archives did have a county outreach program where about four or five people were dedicated to traveling around the state and worked with local government records. They microfilmed a lot of the very early county records, and they also collected photographs from communities all over the state and published the popular book, Vanishing Georgia. However, during the late 70s and the early 80s, budget cuts really gutted the program. From 1982 to 1984, the Georgia Archives lost approximately 19 positions. So this program was really became dormant in the mid-80s. Well, two things happened in the 90s that allowed the Georgia Archives to get back into the archival outreach program. First, in the early 90s, money became much more readily available through NHPRC for the state re-grant program. And in 1993, the Georgia legislature created the Georgia Historical Records Advisory Board, and that's the body through which Georgians could participate in the NHPRC grant programs. Well, GRAB was fortunate in 1996. It obtained its first re-grant for local government records for about $300,000. And in 1998, obtained a second re-grant from NHPRC to address historical repository records. And that was about a $200,000 re-grant. These re-grants encouraged the Georgia legislature to put up a lot of money as cash match for these projects. So all this money coming into the state allowed the board to operate a successful grant program for 8 years, from 1996 through about 2004. But we found that even though we had a successful grant program, there were still problems. Some of the problems that we saw were some organizations, especially in South Georgia, were reluctant to apply for grants. The task seemed daunting, or they were a little intimidated by the grants process. We also saw that sometimes when a grant was awarded, an organization didn't implement it in quite the way that they wanted to because they needed more professional guidance. The third thing we saw was the board used a lot of consultants to travel around the state and work with these local projects, but they couldn't always provide the ongoing support that the local organizations needed. And perhaps the fourth most important problem that we saw is that a lot of small local organizations really weren't able to articulate what their needs really were. They weren't sure how to go about improving their archival programs. And they didn't have archivists around the state. We had a dearth of professional archivists outside of the Atlanta area, so they didn't have professional guidance to go to. I'll give you one example. We had a multicultural organization in South Georgia. They had about 150 cubic feet of records, and half of this was in an outside open warehouse situation. The records weren't inventoried. They weren't sorted in any way. They weren't given any level of professional care. The curator of the organization wanted to address the problem, but he wasn't quite sure how to go about it. He knew the records were important, and he wanted to do something. He also didn't know where to find professional help. We talked to two consultants in the Atlanta area, but both of them were very reluctant because of time constraints to drive down to South Georgia. They also didn't like the distance involved. They were a good way from where this organization was located. So we had the dual problem of an organization needing on-site help and there not being any professional archivists nearby. The Georgia Archives and GRAB decided that a Circle Route Archivist program could provide this much-needed on-site assistance. But we still had the problem of not enough educated archivists around the state. So the strategy that we used to get the program going was first the Georgia Archives developed a relationship with Clayton State University. We knew that Clayton State had a desire to establish a master's program in archival management. They talked about it a lot. And we also had the unique advantage of being located right next door to the National Archives physically and Clayton State right next door. So we had this triad of three organizations that could provide a unique opportunity for students who might be working on a master's program to gain practical experience to work on their master's. The second thing we did after we got Clayton State to come along with us and join in this partnership was the GRAB board applied for its third re-grant from NHPRC. We obtained about $125,000 to get the program started. Our goals for the Circuit Rider Archivist program were threefold. We wanted to provide services of an on-site archivist, and we also wanted to provide monetary grants to these local organizations. Second, we wanted to demonstrate that the services of a traveling archivist moving around the state really could help improve their archival programs and could also help us improve the grant program. The third thing we wanted to do was to stimulate the development of a master's in archival management because no such program existed in Georgia. So those were the goals of the program. How we set about doing this once we got the grant was we designed a very simple two-page simple application for organizations to apply for a circuit rider archivist to come visit them, spend some time on site looking at the records and looking at what their problems were. And then the circuit rider archivist could decide, could he provide the assistance or guidance they needed, or did they need to go a little bit further and apply for a monetary grant and actually undertake maybe a years-long grant project? We then publicized the program very, very widely. We sent announcements to a lot of the professional. There are about 15 professional organizations statewide in Georgia. We had flyers at professional association meetings. We sent email announcements. And there was a very wide distribution to local governments, to libraries, to museums, to court systems, school systems. We really reached out to everybody that was caring for, that we knew was caring for historical records in Georgia. So that's a little bit of background about how the program came to be. I'm going to turn the discussion over now to Judge Estes, who will give you a portrait of Meriwether County, and then she and Louise Garrett will talk about their experiences. Once they saw one of these announcements and they applied for help, what happened?
Thank you, Elizabeth. Ms. Garrett and I are certainly glad to be here. We appreciate the archivist program in Georgia inviting us to come and be on this panel and speak to you all. We felt like that we needed to give you a little bit of a history of our county to understand why they might be interested in coming to see us and why we felt we really needed their help. We are located, well, many of you probably know this, but Georgia is the largest state east of the Mississippi, the state of Georgia. And Meriwether County, within the state of Georgia, is the 25th largest county in land area. Our county has about 499 square miles, 319,360 acres of land comprise Meriwether County. We are in west central Georgia. Am I speaking too loud? We are in west central Georgia, about 60 miles southwest of Atlanta, and approximately 30 to 40 miles from the Alabama line. We are a neighbor to Troup County, and I'm so glad that Kay is here. And if I say anything wrong, Kay, you're the expert, not me. But that Troup County is a neighboring county to Meriwether County and was our parent county, but we'll get into that in a minute. Originally, Meriwether County was inhabited by the Creek Indians. Cherokee Indians were in the northern part of the state. The Creek Indians were in the central and southern part of the state. We're in the Piedmont Plateau, and we have gentle rolling hills and fertile valleys, and it's a beautiful place to live. When I was a little girl, my daddy told me it was God's country, and I believed him. And I'm sure that many of you live in God's country, too, but it will always be God's country to me in Meriwether. We have a mild climate. However, we have experienced the severe heat that Washington has the week before I came up here, so I guess I was supposed to get two shots of it, but at any rate, I have survived. The Okfuskee Trail, which some of you may be familiar with, was the Upper Creek trading route from the Savannah River to the Creek Territory over in Alabama, and that Okfuskee Trail goes through Meriwether County. It was used by the white traders early in the 1700s. We have two bridges, or we had two. We only have one now, unfortunately. We had two covered bridges that were built by a former slave. He was one of the most famous bridge maker in the state of Georgia. And both of these bridges were on the National Register. One of them, unfortunately, has burned. But they were beautiful bridges, and I wish that we could have brought you pictures of them. The former slave was Horace King, by the way, and he was well known for his beautiful bridges. We also have an interesting thing in Meriwether County. We have several springs. White Sulphur Springs, during the time of the Civil War and shortly thereafter, was a resort area. And when soldiers were many of the Union soldiers that were, you know, hurt in battle and wounded, they would end up in that area, and the sulfur water was healing to them. And I know my great-grandmother that lived there at that time has a painting that a soldier from up north brought back to her because she let him, he had nowhere to stay, and she rented him a room to stay. He came back after the war, and of course most people wouldn't speak to him. And she took him in and let him have board a room there, and he had the healing waters of the spring to make him better. And later brought her a portrait. We also have Cold Spring, a cold spring in Meriwether. It feeds the fish hatchery in the city of Warm Springs. It's maintained by the Fish and Wildlife Service as a division of the Department of the Interior. The year-round temperature of that water is 65 degrees. And then, of course, we had Collegiate Springs, which was also a spa resort area that people would come to between 1870 and 1924. But then the one that many of you may be familiar with or may not be is Warm Springs, the where Roosevelt came even before he was elected to the presidency. He heard of, and, but had developed polio, and he heard about the Warm Springs in Georgia. And many of you may have seen the movie, but he came down and felt that it truly, truly helped him. And, of course, the story after that was the Warm Springs Foundation, which he built for polio patients, and which is now the Warm Springs Roosevelt Institute for Rehabilitation. So it is still in existence. Ms. Garrett and I went yesterday. It was a wonderful experience. I had never been to the Capitol or to the White House. And when we were at the White House, it was we felt Georgians feel at home there because Roosevelt spent so much time in Meriwether County. He loved Warm Springs. He knew all the people. He rode through the towns just like anybody else. Wave, it was a different day. And everybody knew him, and it was great sadness and sorrow when he died because he was a friend of the people there. And when I went to the White House yesterday and looked at that row of windows with the low, it's the little White House. That's the way he built the, it's the same design in the front. It was the same feeling and look that we have there. We have some very prominent citizens from Meriwether County. Henry R. Harris was the third Assistant Postmaster General under President Cleveland. Hiram Warner was a member of the 34th Congress and one of the first justices and later the Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court. We have three Georgia governors that grew up in Meriwether County and were natives of there: William Y. Atkinson, John M. Slayton, and Joseph Meriwether Terrell. Judge Terrell was also a representative in the U.S. Senate. Some of you may be familiar with the John Slayton was governor at the time of the Leo Frank trial. I don't know if anyone is familiar with that in history, but it cost him, because he did the right thing, it cost him being governor for the next term. Many felt that that's what did. Orville A. Park was from Meriwether County, lived in the town of Greenville, and he compiled the first real codification of Georgia laws. It's Park's Annotated Code of Georgia. Harmon Caldwell was the president and chancellor of the University of Georgia. Paul Cousins was the president of Shorter College in Rome. Joseph Thrash was responsible for changing the A&M schools in the state to colleges, and he established South Georgia College. Hiram Warner Hill was an associate justice of the Georgia Supreme Court. So we could go on, but we'll stop there. But we are very proud of the people that grew up in Meriwether, and throughout the years, we were known for our school system, and it was an excellent school system, and the children that graduated from there knew their history. And I hope that we can get back to the day where our children know their history, because that's from whence we need to learn. To give you a little bit of personal history on Meriwether County, originally we were a part of Troop County. And in 1827, in December of 1827, Meriwether County was created. It was named for David Meriwether, whose father came from England in 1640. Now, David Meriwether served under George Washington and was the Georgia congressman from 1802 to 1807. And this is interesting to me, that in 1824, now, this is before 1827. 1824, President Monroe appointed David Meriwether and Duncan Campbell to negotiate with the Creek Indians. And in 1826, they had done their job, and an act was passed to organize the territory between the Chattahoochee River and the Flint River. At that time, they were asked to divide that area into five sections. And when they did that, it established five Georgia counties: Lee, Carroll, Troop, Coweta, and Muskogee. Troop, the third section, was by far the largest, and that's when it was divided. And so in 1827, Meriwether County was created. In 1828, and this now is showing you why our records, we feel, are so important and must be preserved. In 1828, the residents of the new county of Meriwether met, and they elected justices of the inferior court. They elected a sheriff, they elected a clerk of the superior court, and they elected a clerk of the inferior court, and a tax collector, and so forth. The justices of the inferior court, which I descend as probate judge, the inferior court was originally took care of, they really did what commissioners do and more. Now, I know that I am overloaded in my job, and I believe it. They've been overloaded since time began. Those justices had to look after roads, bridges, all the minor cases, both criminal and civil, keep up with birth records and marriage records and all this. They had everything to do. So in 1868, they finally did away with the inferior court and established the Court of Ordinary. And then it was some years later that the Court of Ordinary became the probate court. So I'm a descendant of the inferior court, and I need those other four justices, but they took them away. But anyway, they purchased these justices purchased land lots for the county seat, and they named the county seat Greenville. That's where our courthouse is located, and it was named in honor of the Revolutionary War hero Nathaniel Greene. These lots are shown today on the original plat that was drawn up at that time, and they're housed in Miss Garrett's records in the clerk's office in Meriwether County. They are inferior court records, but apparently when at some point they moved those records into the superior court clerk's office. History is so important to all of us. It is so much more important, I think, than it disturbs me today that so many children do not know history. But it won't be your fault because of who you are and what you do. Those who cherish and preserve history, people such as you, are very special people. Miss Garrett and I feel a very deep sense of responsibility to preserve the records of our county, and we know that we need expert help and knowledge to do that, and that will come from you all. It has been a pleasure for us to work with the two here, Elizabeth and Randall, and they are committed to helping us know what to do and how to preserve our most precious records. At this time, I'm going to let Miss Garrett fill you in on some more background about our court records and also tell you how our attention was drawn to this CRA program. Thank you.
You did a good job.
Well, fine. She's the expert.
Y'all, I wrote all that, but I am not a public speaker, okay? Greenville was granted a charter in 1828, and it was incorporated in 1851. The first deed that I have recorded in my office was... Told you to move to the front.
There you go.
We don't have any computer stuff. Okay. The first deed that I have recorded in my office was dated August the 27th, 1827, but it was not recorded until February the 14th, 1828. Most of the early settlers in Meriwether County, since we broke off from Troop County, those deeds are actually recorded in Troop County. Some of the people brought them and had them recorded in Meriwether County, too. But I have so many people searching for old family records, and they can't find the deeds, and I tell them, you're going to have to go to Troup County because that's where it's recorded. The first Superior Court judge, first Superior Court clerk in Meriwether County, at his house, they had actually had a Superior Court there because we didn't have a courthouse until 1832. In 1832, the courthouse was finished. It cost $8,000 to build it. And we used that courthouse up until the cyclone hit us on March the 3rd, 1893. And unbelievably, I don't know, I think the Lord's been looking after us all this time, we didn't lose any records. And why we didn't lose any records, I don't know, but we didn't lose any records. But the courthouse was so destroyed that we couldn't use it. So before that was like in 1877, the commissioners had built this little building on the courthouse lawn. But it's a brick building. And so after the cyclone hit, they moved all the records from the courthouse into that little building. Well, that building has been since, let's see, 1967, it's been used as the deed vault for Meriwether County. And we've grown so much with our records and everything, we had to do a little bit different and build some more things. The new courthouse was completed in 1903, and we used that courthouse until January of 1976. You know, we are on the National Register, our courthouse is, but we were getting it all fixed up, you know, stripping all these staircases and everything. So we had some prisoners doing it, and one of them was smoking, and he threw his cigarette down, and it went all in the cuds, and the courthouse went whew, like that in a minute. We didn't lose any records there either. The records were in those vaults, and we've got two brick vaults, and all those records were in there. And then the probate court has a brick vault too. And so what happened to theirs, it just hit the bottom, you know, when the courthouse hit. It fell, but ours is still standing. We had 24 fire trucks come around and, you know, help put out the fire. Told you I'm on the public speaker. So we saved those records. I guess Stiles and I are very concerned about the records of the county, and my ancestors go back into the 1827 too. So I personally am concerned about our records, plus I want to save them for future generations. We're making history every single day that somebody comes into the courthouse and records a deed. That's history for people 100 years from now. So we have lots and lots and lots of records. So when we got this little thing on the email about applying for this grant, and I brought it with me, Stiles and I talked about it. We said we need some help because we've got lots of records and we, you know, need some money. That's what we said. We need some money to help preserve them. To me, grant means money. Wrong. We filled out this grant, and it wasn't that difficult to fill it out, except, you know, I said, Stiles, we need to go down and count all the books to see how many we have so they'll know that we really need, you know, help. And that took a long time since neither one of us have much time to do it. I'm in court all the time, so I don't have a lot of time. Well, we filled out this little two-page grant thing, and we did it together because we really did think we'd have a better chance, you know, filling it out together. And then, lo and behold, we hear from Randy, and he said on the grant thing you had to put down your first choices is when you wanted, you know, him to come look at us. We put down July as the first because I didn't have any court in July. May was the second choice because I didn't have court the end of the month, And August was my last choice, and then, you know, I really didn't want him to come in August, but that's when he came. So, he came in August, but he came on August the 31st, and by then I was through with court, and September court hadn't started. So we went down in the basement where all these records were, and I brought a book. I told you we don't have any computer stuff, but I took pictures of what it looked like then and what it looks like now. And we talked down there. First of all, Randy and I talked again. And Stiles was upstairs doing something. I don't know what she was doing, but she was doing something. So then she saw today's down the steps, and then she starts talking to Randy. And we found a lot of records, you know, down there that we really didn't know we had. And for some reason, he was really impressed. I couldn't get over it. I don't know why. But he wrote us up this little thing, you know, where, you know, telling us all the things we had. We have lots and lots and lots of records. I've got my records microfilmed. I'm not going to get this right. I call it the Mormon Church, but, you know, the Church of the Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ, right? Okay. They came to Meriwether County back in the 60s and microfilmed all of our records. So we had bunches of records in my office. Now, I don't know if they got tired of what happened, but they didn't microfilm very many of her records. So she's got a big problem with her records. They're not on microfilm. Mine are. Well, one of the things I wanted to do, but see, since 1960, and then I was elected clerk, I went in office in 1985. Nothing had been microfilmed. So that was the first thing I decided I had to do to preserve this record. But as some of you know, if you've ever had to preserve, you know, transfer the records from microfilm, that's not too easy to do. So now we're doing it on images digitally. And that's much easier to do, and I sure will be glad when the archives in Georgia goes to that instead of the microfilm, because it's easier for us to use. But I know it's not a very, hadn't been a long, very, very much, and I don't know if they'll hold up. The application process wasn't very difficult, other than counting all those books. But, you know, we got this little thing back from Randy, and it said, it was really good. I was really impressed. He recommended that we apply for that grant. Well, see, by the time we got this back, September 9th, 2005, I was in court again. I had court the rest of the year. So I didn't read that part about applying for the grant, you know, the money part. I thought I'd already applied for the grant. Wrong. So we kept waiting for the money, and it didn't come. Well, anyway, it wasn't too hard to apply for the grant thing, but the real grant with the money, I think, is a lot more involved. We didn't get that far. Okay.
I think you can see from Judge Estes and Mrs. Garrett that they have a rich heritage in their records. And it's been said that all history is local. And I think you can also say that all archives are local, because all archives originate at a very simple state. It is only when organizations enter into the mix, and sometimes archivists enter into the mix, that records become more and more complicated. And I think that as we look at particularly local records, it is important to understand that local records enrich our entire history, our state histories and our national histories. As we take a look at Meriwether County, there are a couple of other points that were made that I think are significant. One is the workload that these ladies have. And the workload that they have is not unusual for local officials. Now, part of my task was to visit 57 sites throughout Georgia from the beginning of August in 2005 until the end of January in 2006. Those 57 sites were chosen by the archive staff and the Georgia Historical Records Advisory Board. And when I came on board in July of last year, these sites were selected, and I began preparing for my round of visits. And as I prepared for my round of visits, I realized that there is quite a mix of organizations. There were local governments, court systems, school organizations, county commissioners. There were libraries. There were historical societies. There were local museums. And these organizations all faced varying difficulties. And yet there were some issues in common, and particularly with the local governments. One of those issues was lack of time. The time that is involved in these ladies' work is only partly concerned with what we would consider records management or archival work. They have court duties as well. And as we look at these organizations, timing is an issue in which we need to fine-tune our approach in the Circuit Rider Archivist program. And as we have visited the sites around the state, or I should say as I've visited the sites around the state, I have learned much about the state, and I was tempted to do kind of a travel log because I love travel log kinds of things, but it's the wrong audience to do that, so I won't do a travel log. But I was fascinated by the variety throughout Georgia. But I also was fascinated by what I learned. And one of those things I learned was timing. Now, of course, with my schedule of 57 sites, there was the necessity of scheduling these not only when I was available within my duties, but when these folks were available as well. And so in our application process, we have fine-tuned our application for a second round of Circuit Rider Archivist visits that we are planning for next year to allow us to better schedule when we are available and the folks out in the field are available as well. Another thing that I think you'll find in common as archivists with these ladies is the likelihood of disaster occurring to records. Now, that's a theme that has been prominent in the past year. And just as a side note, my visit to Meriwether County was the day after the real impact of Katrina was realized. I drove down to Meriwether County and I passed by a service station. Gas was $2.69 a gallon. It was a little high in my mind, but I thought I'd better stop and get gas on the way back because they're saying it's going to go up. When I came back from Greenville, the service station was closed because they had run out of gas. The price was still $2.69, but it was closed. And that really pointed to me and reminded me of the likelihood of disaster occurring to local governments and local historical repositories. And indeed, a great deal of my work has involved helping to educate those that I've visited in disaster preparedness. As I prepared for my visits to the 57 sites, during July of last year. I had a team at my disposal, and that team consisted of the staff of the Georgia Archives. And when it said that the circuit rider archivist is visiting throughout Georgia, it's really the resources of the Georgia Archives that have been placed at the disposal of the folks throughout Georgia. And part of the preparation that I made in visiting these sites was consulting with colleagues in the office. Christine Wiseman, who's our preservation manager, is an expert in disaster preparedness, and she helped to educate me in helping to educate those in the field. And we have been quite successful in building the awareness of disaster likelihood. There is a strong history of fire in Georgia courthouses. It's not unusual throughout the country, but particularly in Georgia, I've noted a high incidence of fire. Of course, Georgia is prone to hurricanes, and this was also quite on our minds. Also at my disposal were the resources of the Records and Information Management Services, who helped me immensely in preparing to work with local governments. In dealing with local governments, one of the major issues was whether or not they had taken advantage of the pluses that are built into Georgia law. The creation of a records management plan on the county and local level, the adoption of retention and disposal schedules. And as I learned from the Records and Information Management Services folks in Georgia and combined that with experiences I'd had from Ohio, I was able to approach folks at local government level from an educated standpoint and help them to grasp their records management problems in a concrete way. Now, one of the approaches that I took, something I very much was conscious of, is that I did not want to be perceived as an official from Atlanta. And I think some of you can identify with that. Certainly in Ohio and in West Virginia, where I've worked previously, there's a great deal of sectionalism. There's a great deal of urban versus rural dynamics in place. And I wanted not to be a heavy-handed official. And that wasn't my role. I was sent to assist, not to enforce. And so in promoting the adoption of records management plans and the use of retention and disposal schedules, I wanted to make it clear that these were aids that were available to them, not that they were something that they would get in trouble for if they did not use. In preparing for my visits, I also became keenly aware that my role was one of public service. Now, my background, my path to archives was through public history. And I debated a colleague in a panel session a number of years ago, an academic historian. I played the role of the public historian. I debated and made the point that all history is public. All history is local, so all history is public as well. If we are teaching students in the ivory halls of academia, we are, after all, teaching the public. And so I very much was in favor of a public approach to archives, and realizing that we need to step out of the cubicle as archivists. If we confine ourselves to the cubicle, so to speak, we are robbing ourselves of the very reason why we chose to become archivists, and that was for public service. And we also are robbing ourselves of the opportunity to learn from our mistakes and learn the way that things take place at smaller repositories and record centers. Now, one of those steps in stepping out of the cubicle is to be a little more flexible. In consulting with my colleagues, and certainly with a professional background, we have best standards and practices, which we teach and make available. We make folks aware of what the best practices are, what the archival standard is. And yet, it is difficult in visiting South Georgia if the best place they have at the time to store their records is the loft of the county garage, to insist that they maintain a temperature of 68 degrees with a variable of 2 degrees. And so it is important to be a bit of a country doctor and be practical. I consider myself, if I'm using the analogy of a doctor, more like a doc on Gunsmoke rather than Mark Green in ER, because both save lives, but the setting must be taken into account. Well, in my 57 visits, I must say that invariably I was asked the question, have you seen anything as bad as what we've got here? And my response always was, yes, I've seen much worse. But that wasn't in Georgia. That was, sorry, I don't see any colleagues from Ohio, but that was in Ohio, not in Georgia. And so in the visits that I made to the sites around Georgia, I learned from the process. I learned that money isn't necessarily the answer to all questions. I learned that I must look at the entire picture of the repository and not just what they indicated as their concern on their application. And as a good doctor would examine the entire person and not just look down your throat if you have a sore throat, the archivist in the field must look at the entire picture. And so as we approach a new round of circuit rider archivist visits, we hope that our strength will be in our strengths. We had a good program, good feedback, good successes. We also hope that our strengths will be in our weaknesses, those things that we learn that we can tune up next time around. Thank you.
I would like to take this opportunity to say that what Randall has just told you is very good advice. When he came to Meriwether County, which is a small county, and we have done, I will truthfully say it is remarkable to me that our records are in as good a shape as they are in, that they have been so well preserved, that even in the basement where they were located at this of the courthouse now, where they were located, the temperature was just by a fluke proved to be fine for it. It was about 70 degrees and dry. we've been looked after, but his approach was very positive. There was no criticism. There was no look what you've done. No look that I felt no disdain for anything that we had done. And even though he's being kind and saying it was not so bad, it was not so good either. And I do think that that is invaluable advice to any archivist that really wants to preserve records, because as he said, you are you can only do work with what you have to work with, and you have to consider the setting to achieve your goal. And it matters not how you do it, as long as you do save the records. And so I just want to say that I find that very good.
Okay. What I was facing is finally, after years and years and years, I'd finally convinced the county commissioners that I needed help. I was totally out of room. I made this little book, and I told you we didn't do any computer stuff, but I brought what it looked like, and I'm going to let y'all look at it later, what it looked like down in the basement. When we went back into that courthouse, instead of having two floors, you know, we had four. The basement, the commissioners had built the basement, and we had grown so much in the vault that I had had to take so many of the records downstairs. But when they were building that basement, they put heat and air down there, and the temperature was like 70 degrees. Who would have thunk it? But it was perfect for those records, and the humidity was actually better in the basement than it was in my deed vault. So I was facing this tremendous thing. I've got three rooms in my office, and I know that's not much, but that's all I've got. So we had this big basement downstairs, and it took us 4 days to move all those records. I had my records, her records, the DA's records, and the county commissioner's records in the basement. Of course, mine took up well over half the basement. And we had to get all those records out before we could start the renovation process. Randy, I told him later, I said, I don't know why in the world you picked us as the one to be on this program, you know. But Randy was my hero. He really was. He gets embarrassed. But I had such a job ahead of me, and I was scared to death and did not have the time to do it. But Randy got me motivated. He came in August. In September, the architect came to draw up the plans of what we were going to do. In December, I took pictures of kind of what it looked like, but we had cleaned up a little bit before I took these pictures. But January the 2nd, we had to start moving those records out of that basement so we could start painting and renovating the basement and putting it into a deed room. And I just,
you've seen it.
It was a daunting project. Somehow we did get it done. The basement now, according to what Randy said to do, it's got those perfect temperature controls. We got a dehumidifier down there. And, you know, it's perfect. And all these people that used to come to Meriwether County, and they had to go like this, and I mean like this, to get into the deed room, they just go, when did you do this? And I love it. But he's the one that got me started. So we really didn't get any money for this thing, but he did get me motivated. And I just think for the small counties in Georgia, they don't have time. The clerk and the probate court, you know, judges, they don't have time to go to Atlanta. Going to Atlanta, I'd rather go to the dentist than have to go to Atlanta and all that traffic. But we really don't have time to do that. And so when they come out to do this, and we can ask them these questions like, you see this book now, what do I do, you know, to help this book? I don't know what to do. He gave me this little, he on the website. He said, I'll put this on the web, and I don't know that much about computers, but he did put me on a website, and so I ordered the book, and I got some of that stuff that he said would help clean the books. See? So he did do a lot for me, and I appreciate it. I really do.
We have about 5 minutes left. Are there any comments or questions from people out there? Since this is being taped, I was asked to repeat the question. The question was, are we going to publish anything about this?
I have considered that, and the timing of it, I'm uncertain of. I've considered waiting until we're finished with the second round. But I was approached, actually, right before this session to write an article for the journal for the Society of Georgia Archivists. And I probably will be writing an article for that journal. Later on, there may be something more extensive that we undertake. Certainly, I'd be glad to correspond by email with anybody, and we want to be able to assist anyone that has any similar ambitions.
I will tell you that in Georgia, we consider the program to have been extremely successful. Randy's worked with about 60 organizations through the REGRANT. We've provided 31 grants totaling over $260,000 to local organizations. And it's been so successful that the GRAB board has committed next year's funds to continue the Circuit Rider Archivist Program beyond 1 year beyond the NHPRC grant. Any other questions? So the question is, what kind of tools are we creating for future use?
I should mention, as part of the preparation for the visits, we had several tools that were at our disposal. One was a manual that had been developed by our public services section in the Georgia Archives called Preferred Practices for Historical Repositories. And Ann Smith, one of our colleagues, compiled that manual. And it was revised in preparation for our visits. That is a resource that we've made available to historical repositories. For the local governments, there are a number of resources which are available on the web that the A Records and Information Management Service of the Archives have developed. Now, in the aftermath of our program, I've developed discussion groups by email among the participants in the program. Now, conscious of the sectional nature of Georgia, I have developed these as sectional discussion groups, those that have similar interests, have similar acquaintances, similar experiences, can relate to one another, and those bits of information that are common among everyone in the state, we share with everyone in the state by email.
There's one other aspect of the program that hasn't been mentioned, and that is the archival supply grants for a lot of small organizations that didn't necessarily need a large grant or want to apply for a monetary grant. The Circuit Rider Archivist had at his disposal the resources to make available archival supplies, boxes, and folders that a small organization might need, up to $200, $300, $400, $500. There was a fellow in the back who had a question.
Yes, thanks.
The question was, how about people resources? How did the Circuit Rider Archivist visit 57 sites?
There is only one Circuit Rider Archivist, but as I mentioned, we functioned as a team with those in the archives being available. As I rendered my reports after each visit, managers and assistant directors in the Georgia Archives reviewed my reports before I sent them to the recipients. And so the knowledge and experience of those in the archives was available and at hand specifically for those organizations, even though those folks didn't visit in the field. Now, one thing I should note is that it is the goal that this program expand and that it become fruitful and multiply, that on a sectional basis that there be a circuit rider archivist available for South Georgia, the Northern Mountains, the coastal area, and so forth. And so what we're doing now is an experiment. We feel a successful experiment, and we feel it will continue.
I think we have time for one more question. The question was, did the CRA have an agenda for what he wanted to accomplish in each visit?
My major guide was the application. And the application gave me a nutshell profile of each organization. Now, with that in hand, I then spoke, approached by email each organization, then spoke to them by phone before my visit, and prepared for my visit in that way. I planned for each visit in that manner, but I had no set outline for my visits because I considered that each visit was unique. And as I visited or spoke to them by phone, I wanted to have a sense of that organization and its individuality. Even though there are common concerns and common problems, they each had their own personality. And until I visited them in the field, I really was not aware of what that personality was.
Another advantage to the board is the Circuit Rider Archivist Program allowed GRAB to gain a presence in 20 counties that had never before received GRAB funding, and also make awards to 35 new organizations that had never before been touched by board work. So it really extended the outreach. I think that's it. Thank you.